This is the Mindvox podcast, hosted by Claire Jacobs. Mindvox is a space to talk about our minds and mental health, so we cover topics that can be of a triggering or sensitive nature. We will always highlight the topics we cover in the show notes of each episode's description, so please read these before listening. Please note, we're not medical experts, we're only experts of our own mental health experiences. To find out more about the pod or contact us, find us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter using the name Mindvox Pod. Hi everybody, today I have got with me, oh my god, two very, very popular people on the old pod world, and I'm quite nervous, as you can probably tell my voice, but anyway, here goes. Today I've got with me Dawn Marie Farmer and Laura Mears Reynolds, and they moved to the same street at the same time, at the very same age, and they had the same undiagnosed disability, which is incredible. After discovering the impact that undiagnosed ADHD had on each of their lives and the high numbers of missed and undiagnosed ADHD women who have endured the same struggle, they created a podcast to raise awareness and break the stigma around neurodivergence. ADHD as females now has a quarter of a million downloads in 171 countries in just 8 months, and regularly in the top 30 UK podcasts in society and culture, alongside the likes of Louis Theroux and Russell Brand. Oh my gosh. They've interviewed a range of women, including well-known figures like Clementine Ford, Louise Williams, who I've had on the pod here, and even me. With an ever-increasing audience on their pod and across social media, they've come onto this pod to talk about their ADHD experiences, the highs and lows of being an important voice in the ADHD community, and why it's so important to open up the conversation around neurodivergence for women in this current climate. How are you doing, girls?
Bloody hell, you've just made me nervous.
I know.
What is she talking about?
What an introduction.
Is that all right? Did I meet all the criteria? Did I miss anything out? Because you've done a lot.
That was great.
Except I think we might be at 320,000 downloads in 172 countries.
Yeah, so it's ever growing. Yeah.
Ever growing, ridiculously.
No, that's incredible. Well done to you guys. The very first question is, let's go right back to the start. Can you tell us a little bit about how you both met and discovered that you had the same undiagnosed condition?
So basically, I moved from down south up to Aberdeen for my husband's work, and we were looking for somewhere to live, and in amongst it all, like looking at what was around the area, like what's good to do in Aberdeen. I'd literally never been. This is ADHD AF. I moved to a city that I had never been to. The first time I saw Aberdeen was the day that I moved here. That is ADHD. Anyway, so I found out about this place called Fitty, which is this really amazing, weird and wonderful, quirky village, which is actually smack bang on Aberdeen Beach. It's designed by the architect who designed Balmoral, based on Venetian squares. And it is just a magnet for creatives. It's in a city where it's called the Granite City. Everything, all the buildings are grey. And on a grey day, that can be a bit sad with grey skies, grey floor, grey everywhere. But on a sunny day, it is so sparkly and it gets very bright blue skies up here. It can be so, so, so beautiful. But in amongst all of these grey buildings is this place with all these colourful things. Everyone's got like funny gnomes and there's art on the walls and it's just this really, really special place. So I came to visit it for a tourist day out and discovered that you could actually live here, and totally hyper-focused on it, managed to get a house here. We were very, very lucky. And whilst hyper-focusing on hashtags, FootD, Fitty, etc., this one pops up with, I've just moved to Fitty. And
she basically stalked me.
I literally stalked her. Yeah. And immediately just said, I'm moving to Fitty in like 2 weeks or something like that. And just made her be my friend and bulldozed into her life.
So yeah, I'd moved here like a month prior to you moving.
Yeah.
And so I was all over Instagram, hashtag and stuff. And I'm local to the area. And it's just, it's again, for me, it's a magical place as well. And it's one of those places I always dreamed of living. So when an opportunity came for me to move here, I just grabbed it, you know. And I'd been going through a bit of a tough time and was doing a lot of like kind of self-work and looking inwards to myself. And it was at that time as well I was discovering ADHD and the potential that, you know, it affected my life. And it was one of the first times that we kind of got together in a social social side, and we went and had a little fire on the beach, and
it was a little barbecue on my terrace.
Oh, that's
Do you know what? Actually, not fun fact at all. That was the first time we had socialized with anybody apart from each other for 181 days because we moved to Aberdeen thinking this pandemic won't last that long. And it continued. So we had to cancel Christmas. Nobody came to visit. Couldn't meet. You can't make friends during a pandemic because you're not even seeing your nearest and dearest. Mm. So we got together, had this little barbecue and like poured you a glass of wine. And Dawn basically immediately excused herself by immediately said, listen, if I talk nonsense, if I say too much, sorry, but I'm having a drink now. And I think I've got ADHD. And I immediately said, no way. I think I've got ADHD too. And that was it.
How did you, because obviously at that time, well, for me, I had never known much about ADHD until realizing that it may be there. But until recently, there's been not much about ADHD. I know it's now blown up across social media, but at the time that you two would have said that, I don't know how big it was, but how did you both know about some of the symptoms to think you had it?
Ironically, exactly the same way. Mm. It's our other ridiculous similarities and experiences. Both of us found out through conversations with friends.
Yeah.
That was it.
A friend of mine had said her friend had been diagnosed, and that as she was telling her the symptoms, she's like, Dawn, it kind of felt like she was talking about you. And I touched on the ADHD thing years ago, but never really took it seriously because of all the stereotypes.
Yeah.
And I just didn't think, you know, it was anything to consider. And it wasn't until she said that I started looking into it. And then I was like, oh, wow, this is so me.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous that I'm only noticing this now.
Yeah. Mine was a friend got diagnosed and was telling me about her diagnosis. Now, to my eye, and especially even if I did know the symptoms, I would not have perhaps known how differently it can present between people. So to my mind, even if you took away the little boy stereotype or anything else, this is a person who I see who has it all together. Their ducks are in a row, they're successful, they can support themselves well financially, looks after themselves. So, you know, it was so far removed from anything I might have thought. So when I was saying, oh gosh, okay, like, so what does that mean to you? Like, how does that affect your life? And she was telling me, and I said jokingly, well, bloody hell, if you've got it, I've definitely got it. And she went, yeah, that's about that. That's why I'm telling you.
Wow. And I think I've got a feeling a lot of, especially us women, I think a lot of us come to that conclusion that way from hearing someone else being diagnosed, because there isn't, well, until now, where it's just absolutely, thankfully, it's becoming a lot more widespread, isn't it? So we can sort of listen to things online and go, oh, I identified that one.
I also think it's difficult to tell. I'm like, is it becoming more widespread, or is it just, it's really much in the forefront of our, you know.
What you mean as in the bubble of the ADHD community that we live in?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's all over the press this week, of course, isn't it? Yeah. Suddenly these high profile people are speaking out. So yeah, I think, but I know what you mean, because obviously we are living in this echo chamber of ADHD 24/7 at the moment, but I do think now it is becoming more in the mainstream media. I think it's really interesting to note that with both of us having heard from friends, or people that have heard from friends and then gone down a rabbit hole of researching, as we all have, that's why it's so dangerous, this notion of ADHD being a trend. And also, when you look at how broken the system is, it's just absolutely unacceptable for anybody to be casting aspersions about self-diagnosis. Like, self-diagnosis has to be valid in a system where you might not be seen for 6-7 years or something. If you identify traits in yourself that you can connect with a community and feel validated and try and do some things to support yourself. Sorry, I went off on one, didn't I?
No, because that's quite an important point.
It's so true. And the more people that are speaking about it, the more awareness there is.
Yeah.
So that if there are people out there that maybe don't know a lot about it, they're going to start finding out because people are talking. And that's the whole point.
Yeah. And if they're saying that it's estimated that it's 1 in 20, I thought it was 1 in 40, but I've heard that it's 1 in 20. Like, that's people all around you. people that you know in all walks of life. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can stick your trend up your, you know what, like, this is affecting all of us, because there are people in our lives that are struggling, that are masking, that, you know, and yeah, so the trend thing can get right in the bin, can't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think I can understand why people would assume people are just diagnosing incorrectly, because they're seeing a couple of videos and thinking, oh, I lose my keys, that must be me. But there's more to it, because actually people that think that they might have it, they don't just watch a couple of videos and diagnose. No. They will do lots of watching, lots of different videos to see different traits. They'll do a lot of Googling and reading journals and doing the quizzes that you can do. You know, you can, there's a lot of free ones. I know there's some dodgy sites there selling the same ones, which you should avoid. But there are free tests that the GP actually gives you as well online to do those multiple choice to see the scoring. It gives you an indication whether you need to have an assessment. So I don't like that people assume that we're like stupid enough just to see one video and go, yeah, that's me. That's who I am. That's my condition. It's just so much more, isn't it?
Catalyst. Yeah, that's what begins the rabbit hole. We speak about it on the podcast, the ADHD rabbit hole. And for most people that discover ADHD and connect with it, that's exactly where they go when they start learning. Because as soon as they see this one video from TikTok, that just creates this, rabbit hole down they go,
and suddenly have, like, you know, a PhD level study encyclopedic knowledge of something. Not like, oh yeah, that's me from that video.
Yeah, and it's not people jumping on a trend, it's people actually finally finding out, because like you said, there's a hell of a lot of undiagnosed out there. They have no idea they spent many years doing it. So this is finally, you know, we're finally getting the real statistics. I've read in some places they think up to 40% of the population have it but don't know. So that's, you know, worldwide, that's huge. So of course you're going to get a lot of people in the community that do that. But like you say, yeah, because I watch all those sort of videos on TikTok just streamlines that to me. So yeah, I get what you mean when you say it feels like, is it just because that's what I'm looking for? That I feel like it's everywhere.
That's what social media does, doesn't it? It reflects what you're searching back at you. Yeah, so that algorithm, isn't it? World from this one view. Yeah. Like when Brexit happened, I was like, that's not going to happen. I don't know anybody that would vote out. It's like, oh, shit.
Exactly. But my other question really about it as well is, you two are very, very different. You say that you're incredibly different people. You both have the same condition. So I guess, how, when looking at your ADHD, how are you both alike in traits, but also how are you completely different, so people can get an idea of, you know, the fact that none of us are the same. No neurodivergent person has the same traits as the next person.
I think one of the major things is that you're a go person. You can really go and get stuck into things, and whereas I'm the opposite. I can't get started. And that's like a major...
Can't stop.
Yeah, exactly. That's our major difference. And
one of many.
Yeah, one of many. But it comes down to more than just the ADHD symptoms. It's also like, you know, how we've dealt with our lives undiagnosed growing up, and how that's, you know, affected us with our confidence and other things. So even though
our sensitivity.
Yeah, and our insecurities, all of that. Yeah. So you're go, 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 because you fear if you stop, you know, you're gonna lose everything and not achieve things. And I can't get going because
of the same fear. Because of the same
fear. Yeah. Because I'm like, I'm the fear of failure and the fear of, like, you know, people seeing me and getting called out. And it's the same thing, but just completely flipped around
in every which way. Like, even in terms of, if you think about it that way, like, obviously I'm paraphrasing, but like, I can't sleep and she can't get up.
Yeah,
like, it's, you know, we are the polar opposites in that. I've probably had at best 5 hours sleep a night my whole life. Like, I don't really sleep. I wake up very, very early, and I don't need to sleep, really.
Whereas I have to go to bed at night and make sure I'm counting on my fingers that I'm at bed at the right amount of time, so I get my 7 hours. And then even then, it is an absolute battle every single morning to get out of bed.
Yeah, my major struggle is emotional dysregulation and RSD. And you do have the RSD, but in a very different way.
Yeah.
So it is the same symptom that is present in both of us, but it comes out in different ways. So I'm this like massively worried about upsetting people or saying the wrong thing or whatever, letting people down, getting something wrong, saying something the wrong way, miscommunications, things like that really, really worry me. Whereas you're more like, your RSD is more in exposure of things, or like,
I think it's more internalized, whereas you're more emotionally, your emotions are more external. Yeah. Mine's very much bottled up emotions. Yes.
Yeah.
And usually that ends up in me, like, you know, hitting a certain point and breaking or whatever, rather than just, you know, going and getting the emotions out.
Yeah,
it's really important to look at it like that, isn't it? Because I think so many people assume it's just one thing. Like, you know, if you have diabetes, there's a set criteria of what you will have. Yeah. And most people have exactly the same thing. But with these sort of neurological conditions, you can have so many different things, or you can have the same trait, but completely show it in a way that the other person doesn't, who has the same trait. So it's really interesting to see how you're both so different. I think that is how you work so well together, isn't it? And that's okay. And we all interrupt because that's what we do.
I'm agreed of it. I just cannot. I like sit on my hands and try and not blur things out. But I do think that Dawn makes this really, really good point, which is something that we haven't really dived into that much, is that actually being late diagnosed, those coping mechanisms, those walls we've built around ourselves, all the rest of it, are also half the battle. You know, we've talked in the past about, you know, when people are picking apart their personality, for example, or, you know, what's my personality, what's ADHD, or even dealing with the grief, dealing with the hurt and all the people that have let them down in their life, that's their own battle. But actually, this is a whole separate thing that you're talking about here. And it's really super interesting, is actually being able to identify not just what your ADHD traits are, but these coping mechanisms and how that affects and plays out in relation to your ADHD.
Yeah,
super interesting.
Yeah, no, I think that'll be a pod that you need to do and invite me on it. Because I think that's the thing. So many of us, like, we're all late diagnosed, but we will have different trauma from that. Even compared to someone that was diagnosed as a child, they've always known what they are and what they're dealing with, essentially. But we will, one of us may have been in a family where they knew nothing about this stuff and we just call you lazy and this, that, and other. Other people will have just absolutely embraced your eccentricities. So we all have different trauma that will come along with this diagnosis that we have to try and deal with. And we've all formulated our own ways of dealing with it, whether it's addiction, overeating, being really creative, being a workaholic, you know, all these different things. Yeah. And that's why I get really upset with the psychiatrist I saw recently, who said to me, you know, it's the reason we don't have money to support the adults in the NHS when they get the diagnosis of things like this and autism is that there's the assumption that you have got this far and you've created your own coping mechanisms. So we need to fund the kids who haven't created their mechanisms. But my argument is, a lot of us have created the wrong ones, and we don't want to do that for the rest of our lives. We want to have some of the life happier.
I'd like to continue not self-sabotaging.
And on top of that, these ones that are coping just fine, well, a lot of them, I'm sure, are bringing up neurodivergent children and giving them the same complexes and issues and all the rest of it. Support is needed across the board.
I worry about that myself. Yes. Perfect. So that is definitely a few pods for you to note down, too. Because I want to know the answers to these. I want to hear other people's views. But another question really is to do with your diagnosis journey, because both of you have been quite open on your pod about that, and you've had two very different diagnosis journeys, despite at the same time kind of thinking you have it and then trying to get diagnosed. So I don't know if Laura, if you want to start, because yours is a little bit simpler. Explain what yours was like. So yeah. We can compare it to Dawn's.
So I actually went to the NHS I always forget this year. I think it's 2018. I think I'm so bad with numbers, dyscalculia. And did all the forms, did all of that, sent it off, and never heard anything back. In their defense, I suppose, you know, obviously, little matter of pandemic in between then, but to have never heard anything back, what I now obviously know is that it was on me to chase them. But I was completely naive to the fact that I should have to do that, not knowing that treating or diagnosing this was any different to diagnosing any other condition. I had no knowledge of that at the time. So left it and then moved here, spoke to Dawn was starting her process, and I discovered that through my husband's job, he had access to private healthcare, which gave me access to private healthcare, which I never in a million years would have been able to have myself. So that is a privilege, but is literally not even mine. That is it's a fluke more than privilege. And so I got in touch with Bupa and I said, would ADHD diagnosis be covered in this? And they said, if it is impacting you in a way that is giving you anxiety or depression. And I was just like, obviously my entire life drowning in both. So then they did it. They said, yes, they would do it, but they gave me the contact for a psychiatrist to diagnose me locally. But then I had to make the appointment. So that was hard work. And that, I mean, even within the private system, isn't it mad, the ableism that's going on? Now, those lovely people at Bupa, I'm sure that they didn't mean to be ableist and would never know that they were being, but that's not really a good service to provide to somebody with ADHD who struggles with admin, to advocate for themselves, to realise how many days it's been since they've sent an email or made a phone call or even feel confident enough to call. Anyway, we got there and I had my assessment. So that would have been October last, no, so not last year, year before. And then January of 2022, I got diagnosed in 1 hour on a telephone call. And that was that.
Yeah. That time for 1 hour. It drives me
1 hour. Yeah.
That's
really bad, isn't it?
And no proof, thank God, because I sure as hell do not have my school reports. And my entire life was based around trying to make my parents proud of me academically, even though I didn't succeed many times. So if you were going to ask my mum what I was like at school, she would have said that I tried my best and I was a good student. She would have been completely oblivious to the struggles that I faced.
Yeah, I think that's why they have to take into account a lot more than just your parents. I think I would have had the same thing. I would have been was fine, she was normal, she was like everyone else, because
exactly
that's
so you've got
normal.
Gatekeeping GPs, you've got gatekeeping families, and on top of that, it's shown that many of us struggle so much with personal relationships that in itself is ableist to assume that we actually have somebody from our past that can speak for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Good point. So, yeah, good point. Yeah. And for you, Dawn, you've had a completely different experience, haven't you?
Yeah, it's been quite an ordeal. So I initially approached my doctor in May of 2021. Is that right? 2021?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, dates. So 2021, I initially approached the doctor. I was seeing a life coach at the time and I was in therapy and I'd made a big decision to quit my career and start uni because I'd always lacked self-belief that I could even do that. And so all this life coaching and everything was just about me trying to gain more confidence so that I could do it. I had this belief that I wasn't academic in any way, shape or form. I left school at 16. And this was kind of like me trying to prove to myself, no, that you can, because I know the capabilities there. But every single time I would always, you know, like lose momentum, lose motivation. And so I was really determined to start uni and smash it. So
which
she is. Well, I'm doing it. Yeah, okay, I am. I'm like, admit it. But yeah, so I approached my doctor in May and I thought I started uni in September. I'll have my diagnosis by starting uni and then we can just crack on and, you know, things will be good. Oh boy, was I wrong. So started uni, was none the wiser. I chased the doctor. I think it was August before I even got a letter saying that I'd been referred. So obviously it said in the letter, long waiting list. So I actually approached the inclusion team at uni and told them that I was going through this. And they kindly put me to an educational psychologist. And through that, I was able to get an assessment done there, which a full report confirms that he believes I have ADHD. But because that's not a clinical diagnosis, that isn't going to help me get any support treatment or medication. So I had this piece of paper, but couldn't really do much with it. And I obviously they started putting in a little bit of support through uni as well. So that did help on the, you know, the academic side of things, support wise. And then it was just waiting, chasing. In January, my therapist had managed to get a hold of someone that said I was fourth on the list to be seen. So that was hopeful. But that was January. And I didn't hear anything again until September, when I finally chased and said, look, you're pushing me to now look for a private diagnosis, which I can't afford, But I feel like I've got no choice because I'm really struggling and I need help.
Can't cope.
And I can't cope. And I'm failing this course that I so very want to not fail. So I chased them and chased them and eventually got something back that said I had an appointment in October. So we were all very excited about this. Yeah. And, you know, this
in
was...
ADHD Awareness Month. No
yeah.
Less.
So I thought I was going to get my diagnosis. Went into my appointment, my two-hour appointment with a psychiatrist that didn't even have a room for me and didn't even take his jacket off for the 2 hours. And I'm not just talking like a blazer, full-blown outdoor coat. Rain jacket. Didn't even take it off for the whole 2 hours I was in there with him. And it was just like, do you even care? Like, do you even want to be here? So that was that. And at the end of the assessment, he then disclosed that this was just part one of however many, an undisclosed amount of a number of appointments, and I wouldn't be seen again in, for another 4 months' time.
Was that like a screener? You know how, like, I know the NHS for autism, for instance, you go through like a 1 hour thing and it's a screener, but that's usually put in a letter beforehand that this is to see whether or not we're going to take you to the full assessment. Yeah. Is that what that was, or was it different?
Well, no, this was with a psychiatrist.
Part one of the assessment.
So I had a bit of a diva strop in his office and said, why is it like this? Which to be told that, you know, it takes approximately 8 hours to diagnose someone, and that is their process and that is what they do. And so at this point I asked, I was like, so are you invalidating anyone that's got a private diagnosis that's only taken an hour? And he said, no, it's just that we're more thorough. And I'm like, well, that sounds like you're invalidating anyone that's got a diagnosis elsewhere.
And how can they afford to do that?
Yeah.
With a lack of resources and funding, like, why are you taking 8 hours to do a 1 hour job? I'm awful thorough, but there's a crisis going on here.
That doesn't make sense, because I know with autism, they do need to do it. Well, this is why I'm confused the other way. So autism, you have to have a lot of hours because they need to see you and your body language and all this sort of stuff to kind of, it's a lot more complex, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more traits to cross over. And they even do like second ones because they reckon on your second visit, you're more likely to unmask a bit because you've met them before and things like that. But ADHD is a whole nother level. So I don't understand why, like, my partner was diagnosed in 10 minutes.
Yeah,
literally 10 ridiculous. Minutes. So
to say I was devastated is an understatement. And I walked out of there, got lost in the hospital as well. That was the next thing, in floods of tears, like hysterical, trying to find my way out of this hospital that I didn't know where I was going. And instantly was like, I need to phone the doctor. I need to, you know, like, speak to someone. This isn't okay. Thankfully, got hold of a GP who I hadn't dealt with before, but was really sympathetic and understanding. And I told her, right, I need a referral. I need to go private. I don't have 4 months left in me to wait. And she referred me to a private clinic so that I could go and get shared care, which meant I could get my medication through the NHS once I had a diagnosis. And within like, what, a month and a half, maybe, I had my diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And so got my diagnosis and started medication at the end of December.
That's amazing. And I know, I remember you sort of crowdfunded via the pod as well, didn't you? I think some of the community helped you with that, didn't they? Which I think is amazing.
Yes, we had a Buy Me a Coffee set up to help us with funding for the podcast anyway. And so we did do a shout out and asked our community to help towards the private diagnosis, because like I said, it wasn't something I could afford. So like through our community, which I am so incredibly grateful for, like I cannot thank them enough, because I'm now being able to like kind of focus on my life and start, you know, dealing with this and with the support and the help that I need. And yeah, that's been invaluable, the help that we've received from this community.
Like, and the thing is as well, you know, all the time we're getting all these messages saying how much our podcast is helping people, but like the reality is we could not have gone on as we were.
Mm-mm.
So it's kind of, it's changed into this whole community like project, because the community is helping us to help the community. Do you know what I mean? It's a really special thing.
Yeah, I get goosies.
Yeah, it's lovely. It just shows that we all just are so desperate to know people that understand us, because we've had years and years of our lives of not having anyone. We finally fit a community, which is amazing. And I think, now I've had a lot, I don't know if you've had this question from people that you know, but I've often had people saying, well, the age you are now, why does it matter? Why do you need the label? Since you've had your label, how has it changed things for you guys?
I think for me, it's to do with my self-worth. like before I had a diagnosis, I fully believed that every downfall and everything that was negative in my life was my fault. I was responsible for that. I was lazy. I was incompetent. I was stupid. I was just inept, essentially, at everything in life. And like, I just couldn't do things. And that was my fault. Whereas now I have this diagnosis. I have an understanding that I'm not inept. Mm. And like, for me, that is absolutely, I'm getting emotional about this, but it's life-changing to think that you were just so shit at life to realize that that's not your fault. And that is, like, if that's a label, then I will take that label every day for the rest of my life, because it is life-changing. Sorry,
I'm not emotional. No, that's fine. I always make people cry. That's my job. I love it.
This is rare.
I'm grateful.
Mine's much the same. You know, I've always just felt like a complete alien. And the difference is Dawn's managed to do the life things that I just cannot do. I can't drive. I can't really hold down a job. I've never even been able to live somewhere with a cold climate without wanting to just, like, you know, not be around.
Sorry to be sunny Aberdeen.
But, you know, like, it literally was a case of waking up the day after my diagnosis and just thinking, just really realizing that this was a new life. That I, everything that I knew or everything that I felt about myself, it didn't need to continue. It didn't need to go on as it was. This was a completely new start. And it's not to say I leapt out of bed and clicked my bloody heels together, but I didn't drag myself out of bed hating myself and not wanting to be around anymore. That is the reality of it. But it's, you know, it's taken an enormous amount of work, and it still takes a lot of work. My RSD is hard. Like, I can very quickly, and this is embarrassing to admit, you know, I'm 40 this year. It is embarrassing to admit that very quickly, if, you know, somebody didn't reply to an email, for example, that I could absolutely convince myself that they hate me, you know, and I could be worried sick about it, and I could fall into a hole of every which way, everything that I said, what is it that I did? Did somebody say something? Did it? Like, I could still do that. And what's nice about it, because that hasn't gone, is getting better, but it hasn't gone, is that now with the diagnosis and you know, the education, educating myself, understanding it, seeing this in other people, seeing a different side of it from Dawn, you know, every day, is that I can now go, oh God, that hurts. I'm really triggered. I think that person hates me. I can at least now go, but that's probably not true. And so I think that's a year in. And so, you know, with more time and more work, hopefully I won't even get the stab in the heart eventually.
Well, that's it.
You know?
That's it. Like, yeah, these things don't just disappear overnight, but
with the knowledge, with the diagnosis, with the knowledge, with the validation, with the community, it changes everything.
Yeah, it really does.
It gives you a chance to look at these traits and is there ways of reducing them. I mean, a lot of them you can't get rid of, but you can learn to live with them rather than criticize yourself.
Give yourself a fighting chance.
Exactly. Yeah. I totally agree with you. I'm just interrupting this episode to say thank you for listening. I really hope you like it so far. I don't make money from creating this podcast currently, and I've always wanted to keep it free, inclusive, and accessible for everybody, so you can hopefully benefit from it as much as I do. It takes many hours to record, edit, and maintain the podcast, and there are costs incurred through things like recording and editing equipment, maintaining it online, and getting tech help where needed, which I do need sometimes because I'm not tech savvy. I know times are hard, but if you're in a position to donate the price of a coffee, or even lower than that, every little helps me to keep this podcast free and accessible for all. To donate, simply go to the link in our bio on this podcast service you're listening from, or go to the Linktree website and search for MindVoxPod. This link is also on the bio of our Instagram and Facebook pages, which are also found by searching MindVoxPod. For those not in a position to do any of this, which is absolutely fine, you can help by following and sharing the pod across social media, telling your friends about us, and rating and reviewing it wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy the rest of the episode.
So another side to the label is people will say, you know, what's the point of it? But I've also had people saying, well, now you've got your label, you're using that as an excuse for your behaviour. And I wonder if either of you have ever had that, and how you feel about that, or how you respond to people that say things like that.
I know what you're going to say. Do you know what you're going to say?
But I was going to say that, yeah, like I think I do use it as an excuse.
But I think you do, yet less. And I'm glad of that.
Yeah.
Because you did used to use it as an excuse. Mm-hmm. And you would say it. You'd be the first to admit it. You'd be like, well, but not just to others, but to yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So like in terms of discipline, if you didn't do something, you would excuse yourself by saying, mm-hmm. I've got ADHD, which makes it sound bad because I'm not saying that is an excuse. But in terms of not trying more than you could have tried at points when you could.
Yeah.
Because we all know that there are points when we can't do it. But you were giving yourself an easy ride,
yeah.
Just to begin with.
I think because part of my problem is that if I'm struggling with something, I'll quit. And that's always been something that I do. So rather than failing, quitting makes it my choice. I decided to quit. So it's not a failure because I made the decision. And so with the ADHD and having the diagnosis, it's like, well, I've got ADHD. So, you know, that's the reason now. So it's not even that I'm quitting. It's because I've got ADHD.
Yes,
and
that's it.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like using that as an excuse. And it's, again, it's all learning. Like I'm doing it less and I will continue to do it less. Like it's about learning what is actually my ADHD and what is me and the fine line between it
It's about choices, isn't it? And responsibility as well. The world isn't going to bend for us just mm-hmm. because we have this diagnosis. Now, we can be honest and upfront and explain the things we struggle with. We can try and get support and have supportive people around us. A good example is me having to make that appointment or you having to bloody chase for your NHS appointment.
Yeah.
Yes, that's ableist. Yes, that's not right. Yes, it's an absolute bloody struggle, but it isn't going to happen any other way. And actually, there are things that you are just going to have to push through because that's how the world is, you know, and things do need to happen.
And there will be people that, you know, see using it as an excuse. And again, it's just advocating for yourself and explaining to people that maybe this is the reason that I'm late. Because I've got ADHD. And maybe there are things that I can try and put into place that change it. It's not an excuse. It's an explanation.
It's the explanation.
It's
exactly.
An explanation. And that's the difference.
Yeah, 100%. Mm. Yeah. For me, like, I've had... I've had people... Not that many people, but a couple of people that haven't really got it. And I've heard it said, like, what's her having ADHD got to do with anything? That one cut really deep. It's like, well, it's got to do with everything, actually. It's a deal. It affects every single aspect of my life. But for example, made up example, if I was to forget your birthday, I've still forgotten your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I've forgotten your birthday is not because I don't love and care about you. It's because I have ADHD. However, forgetting your birthday could still feel like I don't love and care about you. And in that moment is when the communication and the understanding have to come in. Like, I'm not saying that I can forget everyone's birthday and get away with it because I've got ADHD and that's my excuse. I'm saying it might happen. If it happens, here's the reason. But also, if it happens, tell me, because if I'm in a relationship with you, I have a responsibility to you to not let you down. And yes, I may have let you down by forgetting your birthday, but I will make you know that I love and care about you because that's my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
So it's finding that balance. It's communication and taking responsibility and asking for the help and explaining the ways that you struggle. Mm. But one of the things we talk about all the time is this self-inventory thing, because we've masked even to ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you can't ask for the help and you can't even necessarily identify the ways that you struggle. There are millions of ways that you won't even notice until you look yourself in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard, you know, stupid things like, I hate going to the post office. And that's a really stupid, tiny little thing that sounds ridiculous, but it does. It gives me anxiety because I'm worried that I will have written the address down wrong. I will have read the wrong one. I've written it down wrong. I'm going to go up to the till and they've still got the glass screens and I can't hear them properly because I have auditory processing disorder. And then I don't know if I've said it right. If I pick the right option, then I send it. I don't know if it's going to get there. We're talking about massive anxiety about this tiny little stupid thing
that most people
take for granted as totally, totally normal. But if I don't admit that to myself and to others, like, who's winning here? Like, there's no winners there, is there? Am I just not going to go? Or I'm going to live with this crippling anxiety, which is why, for example, doing our merchandise, and when listeners were asking for merchandise, we've enlisted, one of the many reasons we've enlisted other creatives to do that for us, is because between us, we'll either forget or have a nervous breakdown about it.
Yeah, that's it. It's about working to your strengths, getting help where you struggle, and communicating with people.
And anybody who says it's an excuse has not educated themselves and needs to understand it. And, you know, if your intentions are often our actions don't mirror our intentions. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're not using it as an excuse to yourself and holding yourself back, that's the only line in which we'll hear the word excuse. Really.
Yeah. And I think if someone does think it's an excuse, then it's about talking to that person as well. Mm. It's like, that's just an excuse. Well, let me explain to you why it isn't.
Yeah.
Yes, you know? Exactly. And that's what your pod does. And that's the problem for me. I'm like, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. I'm not saying it's okay that I've done that. I'm saying this is why. This is how my brain has done this. It's wired this way. And I've not done it to hurt you, like the birthday thing. I think people don't understand that massive process. Well, just put it on your calendar. Just have an alarm. But if we're in the middle of another task and that alarm comes on, we're not noticing it. It's forgotten as soon as we've swiped it away. So like, those little things, they don't realise and they take it personally. And I think that's the stuff that is really great, that things like this and your podcast and all these videos on TikTok, they show, hopefully educate people that we're not trying to do it as an excuse. We're trying to explain to you how difficult these basic things are. And we don't want to be like this. It tears us up. I guess the other side of it now you're both diagnosed, is medication. A lot of people say it does wonders for their ADHD. How are you both doing? Where are you both at with your titration journeys?
Well, I'm very new. I've just started, so I'm not even a month in. Although you say you can see a lot of changes in me, whereas I'm not seeing them myself as much. I'm still like just a little bit like, when is this going to start working? But like I say, it's very early. I started around Christmas time when there was lack of structure around. And then after the new year, premenstrual, and we all know how hormones affect things as well. So like I'm just very early into this journey. And I just think I need to give it a little bit of time at the moment to figure out.
And dosage is everything. Yeah, yeah, potentially there's a different type of medication altogether.
But like I am hopeful and I want to, you know, keep going with it and seeing where it takes me, because obviously any help I'm welcome to. So
Have you got any side effects yet?
I mean, I've noticed the dry mouth.
You just got to drink loads
of water. Yeah, so for the first couple of weeks I was like, I'm not any thirstier, but definitely since I've gone up, because I started on a low dose for the first week, and then when I went up, I've noticed this last couple of weeks that I have a drier mouth, and drinking water is one of my biggest struggles. I can go a whole day without drinking anything, and it won't be till bedtime. I'm like, oh shit, I should probably have a glass of water now. So I am noticing that I have a drier mouth. Therefore, I want to drink so that I can lubricate the mouth to be able to talk. But yeah, noticed that. Hands and feet have been a little bit colder. I'm one of these.
It's bloody freezing up here though.
I'm one of these people that is like warm all the time. I've always been like kind of cozy person. Don't like the cold doesn't get to me that much, but cold hands and feet for me is just weird. So that's definitely something that I've noticed. I mean, it's not bad, but I'm just aware of it.
Mm.
Definitely changes to my appetite. But again, as someone that's like struggled with binge eating disorder like their whole life, like it's not a bad thing that it's helping with that. But I'm still eating and I'm still able to sit down and have a 3-course meal. It's the impulsive snacking, like I would just open the fridge out of pure boredom or something to do and just grab like blooming whole chorizo sausage and just get it down me. But it's true, and I'm not doing that. I'm not snacking so much now. I'm getting up, I'm having breakfast, I'm having lunch, and I'm having dinner, and that is completely different for me.
Yeah.
So there is some changes then, even though you're on such a low dose still.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, I guess, like those are the things that I'm kind of noticing, but I guess it's the things that I'm not noticing that I'm taking stack of.
Yeah.
So like I'm still struggling to keep on top of my housework, keep on top of my personal hygiene, keep focused, motivated, get tasks started. Those are my biggest struggles. So I guess they're the ones that are going to take a little bit of time to adjust to. It's not just the medication, because I've got this mental block in my head and years of lack of self-belief where I'm just like, I'm not capable. Mm-hmm. And that holds me back from getting things done. So mm-hmm. if I can keep changing the way I think and working on that side of things, then the drugs and the therapy mm-hmm. and yes, everything can work together, yes. hopefully, to iron out all these little problems that I still have.
I think there is a need for much more than just meds. And the thing they're not yes. doing, a lot of these places that diagnose you just give you the meds. You need that other stuff like coaching or therapy or whatever that helps you learn the strategies at the same time. And that's where they've kind of failed me, really, I feel. Yeah. But the other side is people assume, well, you take those stimulants, you're going to be focused. So yeah, that kind of, no, because actually what they don't tell you is you could be focusing on the wrong things. It still doesn't help you learn to focus on the right things. So mm-hmm. some people go down loopholes of focusing on, I don't know, some stupid thing they've started watching on TikTok instead of doing their chores. And they'll yeah. just like incessantly do it because when the meds kick in, they'll do that. So people don't teach you that you've still got to learn how to try and pick the right thing to focus on alongside yeah. the meds, if that makes sense. I don't know if yeah. I mean, Laura, you've been on it longer. I don't know if you're on the same med, but you've been on them longer. Are you finished titration?
I've got another meds review at the end of this month. So I started meds in March and immediately noticed a huge difference, but still had some things that I was struggling with. So they said, I thought, well, if this much has happened, if I can notice this much, because the first thing that happened for me was my anxiety went away straight away. I didn't even know that I could live like that. I didn't even know that that wasn't just how life felt, you know, that was the big one. And so then when I identified that it was helping that much, but I was still struggling with X, Y, and Z, I was like, yeah, stick me up another one. Like, let's go up and see what else can come off. That'd be great. Without really understanding that that's not how it works. And so I was put on way too high a dose and I felt very unwell for quite a long time. And me being me, I don't know, fear, like I didn't want to make a fuss. I thought they might say, you know, you've got to come off it. Or I don't know what I thought was going to happen. So I just kind of persevered for about 6 or 7 weeks, pretty much keeling over every time I stood up and, you know, really white, like my toes turning blue and all sorts of awful things. And then eventually said, yeah, no, these are probably a little bit too high and came back down. So I think the psychiatrist said that they wanted to bring me back down to the original dose. But I'm not too sure about that. I don't really know why, because I think I'm fine on this.
See what they say
on the 25th. Because mm-hmm. I think my concern was, again, like when I was speaking to them, I was a bit like, you know, when you come out of a situation and you think, oh, I wish I'd said this or that. And I came away thinking, well, hang on, this is the person who knows what they're talking about. They're not thinking that, like, oh, she's not depressed anymore, so come off antidepressants. Like this, I've got ADHD for life. You know, like I'm going to have whatever we've got me on is as long as I choose to be on it. It's not going to, you know, I don't know.
But I think a lot of people as well, they don't realise that sometimes titration is a long process. Like you said, March, you started. I started in May. It's still got, and I'm still none the wiser as to what will be best for me. So it's not an easy, here's just a pill, take that, you'll be fine and you'll just get on with life. And have either of you been offered anything alongside that, like coaching or therapies, or have you gone and sought that yourself?
I asked and they said I was on a waiting list for therapy for counselling. And I don't know why that couldn't also have been private, but I assume I'm on an NHS waitlist. So I don't have a therapist right now, but I have identified that that is what I need to do now, is I need to invest in, I'd like to explore ADHD coaching. I'd like to go, but I've had therapy in the past, but now it's kind of a bit more specific. I sort of know what it is that I need help with. It's just money, really. So hopefully we can start making more. Anyone wants to sponsor us? We've got medical bills to pay.
Yeah. And for us to do this podcast and to do it well and continue to do it well, we need a little bit of that.
Yeah, no, definitely. And talking of that, you've led me nicely into my next question, which is about your podcast, actually. So why did you create it in the first place? What is it that you wanted to achieve? And how did you even have that conversation of just being like, let's do a pod?
So what happened was the ADHD Adults podcast, Dr. James Brown, we have a mutual friend, a very good friend, and he had shared the podcast. And it was just at the moment that we were both starting the journey of getting diagnosed. So I shared it with Dawn, and Mrs. Impulsive here just went, let's do our own.
I hadn't even listened.
Oh, what was it? Because you thought that yours would be better than us. No, mate. She hadn't even listened to it. She just literally went, let's do our own. And I was a bit like, yeah, all right. But yeah, just listen to it though, because it's really good. And then she said it again. And I actually did some podcasting a few years back with a friend.
Whereas I had no podcasting experience.
It's like, well, actually, I really did enjoy doing that. So yeah, let's do it. That's it. And then obviously at that time, you know, you're starting to learn more and more about what's going on and the average age for a woman to be diagnosed, et cetera, et cetera. But also the ADHD Adults podcast helped us so much.
Yeah, I love them.
Things like not just learning about how it's going to be, the fact that it is going to feel like a bit of a test, because it basically is.
Yeah.
You know, what you're going to need, the criteria you're going to need to meet. James Brown also talked about binge eating disorder, and I've had my own struggles with eating disorders, and to hear him say those words, I was really like, bloody hell, that's brave. But then the validation that I felt, I was like, bloody hell, that's powerful. Like that's what people need to be doing. And I think, you know, particularly as we said, learning about the statistics with women, etc., it was like, well, this is brilliant, but actually, what about if we did one? Because there's going to be loads of random rebel forever children weirdos like us out there, right? So we should probably speak to them.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, yeah, so when you approached me with the boys podcast, like obviously I hadn't listened to it, and my initial was like, let's start our own. I had been looking online and looking for podcasts about ADHD, and I couldn't find anything that really related, that I could really relate to and whatnot. And obviously I started listening to the guys and love their podcast, and it's been super informative, and I've learned lots about it, but there was still that where it's just like, I just want something with that relatability factor. And you know, being female as well, like the differences between male and female, and there was just nothing really UK based.
There are lots of different podcasts, and they're all fantastic, and they're all doing fantastic work. It was just more that there wasn't one that really spoke to us. And I think also
lots about parenthood.
But also nobody that was actually directly documenting the process. And that is what we've done in real time. Do you know what I mean? Like we've gone week by week. What's going on? You know, my only regret is that we didn't start it sooner, because then it kind of gave this whole impression that like one's fixed and one's broken, and that's not how it is at all.
But I think we cleared that up a lot in
the last episode. You did well in the last one. It was quite a sad one, really, but I identified with it hugely. I was like, Laura, you're my soul sister, 100%. I was like, I'm doing exactly the same thing as you, and I'm obviously a year and 2 days, actually, my diagnosis. But yes, the boys are amazing, and that's the same thing. I listened to them first, and they still, I don't know if you've heard recently, when obviously his father passed away, James, I was crying the whole way through. Absolutely amazing. But they are great. And like you said, they're very sciencey. So they give us why and how we do it. But you guys give us the day-to-day, how it really affects women. Because we are a bit different. And the feelings of it and what we've had to go through. And, you know, it's just a lot more of the real day-to-day stuff. So it's a lovely mixture of having both of you guys sort of in the world, you know, of pods, so that we can get such a massive understanding on both areas. And I love that you've also interviewed each other on each other's ones and got perspectives. It's brilliant. Now Mrs. ADHD, you had her. I love her.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I love her. And your interview of her is brilliant. But anyway, I digress. So kind of, you've now been going, was it nearly a year, the pod? How many months have you been doing it now?
So it's like we started in May last year.
Oh, okay. So it's 9 months-ish nearly.
Yeah.
And what's that been like? Obviously you've soared, but like, what have been the highs and lows of doing this podcast for you guys?
Oh, God. I mean, there's been so many.
Well, the first high is like when we had our first 50 listeners, we basically thought we were like, I don't know.
We were getting excited if we'd got like 50 a day, and then it was like 100 a day, and then it's like, oh, we got 50 by noon.
Yeah,
and it just kept growing. So we kept celebrating these wins, and they just kept going and going. And that we still can't believe.
Yeah,
it, you know?
Like in terms of the podcast, like we were really, really chuffed that James Brown came and spoke to mm-hmm. us. That was really nice of him, because I definitely think that that gave us a real foot up. You know, without that first interview with him, we're just too. Women having a bit of a whinge, you know, or having a laugh as well. But I mean, from an outsider's perspective,
yeah.
if you were going to try and, you know, interview other people, we already have a doctor, we have a male, which obviously clears up the thing about our name, which we knew was a risk. We knew we were sort of isolating ourselves a little bit, or potentially pushing people away by calling ourselves ADHD as females. But we just really wanted to call it ADHD AF.
And we wanted the acronym.
It's a really clever name, because yeah, you can take it in two ways. That I think it's just perfect. But also, I think even it's not just for females, because like my partner listens to you because he wants to learn more about me.
We kind of wanted it as well, because it kind of sets the tone of us, like we're juvenile. It's a childish sense of humor, and we swear. So like if you get the joke and you think that's funny, then you're probably our kind of people, and you're probably going to like it.
Yeah.
But I mean, after James, like, real high was obviously Clementine Ford.
Because both
of those you had quite early on, like when you weren't. And I'm thinking, how did you get? Obviously, James had a mutual friend, but like Clementine.
Clementine Ford put on her socials that she'd just been diagnosed. You shared it with me.
I was like, we need to get this woman.
I messaged her, because she wrote this lovely, lovely, she's obviously best-selling author. So beautiful words that she wrote. And I just basically wrote back to her in an email just saying, like, I was really moved by what you said, blah, 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 different words that she used. Do you want to come on? And she said yes. We had about 10 followers, about 20 listeners. We had nothing.
And then like in a week, we were like famous in Australia.
But it was ridiculous, because we literally we got up at like 4 or 5 in the morning or something.
Yeah.
And I'm just trotting out of my cottage to come and talk to you. And we're like, oh, hi, Clementine Ford. It was the most bizarre thing ever.
I don't think we had time to get nervous about it either, because because it just happened.
It was just happening.
Yeah, it just happened. And that
was a real high, because she was just so great.
And
so
much, very inspiring.
You know, so much of what she said as well has really rung true, because we were talking to her about, because obviously she's very outspoken. She says what she wants to say, and she fights for the causes that she believes in.
Mm-hmm.
And like I kind of said something like, you know, we're a bit wary. Like I've got this RSD problem, and I'm a bit wary that, like, you know, people are going to be awful to us. People are going to say awful things. And she just said, you know, the thing is, when you really believe in what you're fighting for, and you know in your heart that you're right and you've got to keep going, like it just doesn't matter. And I was like, God, that'd be nice. But actually, it's nice to notice how much more that way we are going, you know?
Have you had any trolls or, you know, horrible negative responses, and how have you dealt with that because of things like RSD?
It's not been too bad.
We've had a couple, but really, compared to how many listeners and how many followers, we haven't had that many. But we've had a couple of people, and one in particular, which Jen and I kicked off about on the podcast. I don't know if you've heard that one.
Where
I'm just basically
Laura.
Like quoting Brené Brown at the end of an episode, because somebody said it was like my mic drop moment. But it was just like all about not being in the arena, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, daring greatly, get off my case, just because they didn't like our social media. But the point of our social media being how it is, it's loud, it's too much. We are the type of ADHD that have been told all our life that we are too much.
Need to be quiet, need to tone it down.
Not love.
Need to be, you know, you need to be more ladylike and sit and listen and fuck off.
We are bright colours, loud music, too loud, too emotional, sometimes too aggressive. We are all of the twos. We are too much, right? So we are effectively unmasking and taking our too muchness and putting it out in the world. And that, so to make it all right, to make it known that that's a thing, you're not showing off. You actually are that excited about it, or you actually are, do you know what I mean? Like, that was why I was so annoyed about that man, because effectively he said, this is too much, you're too much.
That is the name of our up and coming tour.
It is.
Yeah, I was going to ask about this. You're going on tour. Now, I'm obviously at the moment we've got James and Alex around everywhere, and I can't wait to try and get tickets to them. But you're going, and I want to know where you're going and if you're going to come anywhere near me, because you've hinted it on socials, but I've not seen no locations yet. So is there anything you can tell me right now about where you're going?
So it's called the Too Much Tour.
Mm-hmm.
And it's effectively going, so it isn't a live podcast recording or anything. It is effectively just going to be our podcast in show form, in a nutshell. So as much as we are going to talk about various topics, various traits and experiences, it's not necessarily educational. As ever, it's going to be our experience of that.
It's going to be fun, dopamine filled.
I mean, entertainment.
Going to
be tears as well.
Yeah, I mean, probably, absolutely.
I'm definitely going to forget what we're talking about.
It's going to be fun and high octane and exciting. Yeah. And yeah, you probably won't learn much, but you'll probably...
Well, you might be fine. You might learn much, but it's not going to be educational. Yeah. It's not us going into the science of things or anything like that.
Well, we don't need to because they do that.
Yeah,
we,
exactly.
You guys are about something completely different.
To the boys.
Stay in our own lane and we just be us. We'd love people to wear leopard print as part of our leopard print army.
Yeah.
It's really about bringing the community together. It's us connecting with the community because we're so bloody grateful. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And you know, it is about uniting ourselves, uniting with each other. So many of the people have reached out after my episode saying that they do isolate themselves. They can identify that they do. Well, now all of these people that can identify that they isolated themselves because they don't fit in, well, we fit here.
Yeah.
Yes, we are aliens, but together we make our own planet, you know?
Exactly.
So will it be kind of interactive? Are you going to want the audience to sort of chat with you?
We're planning to make some interactive elements. We have announced our first date, which is March the 4th in Aberdeen. Yeah.
Okay.
So we're just getting things put together for that. And we want to do the Aberdeen date first so that we can see if there's any things that we need, teething problems, anything that we need to iron out before we actually take it on the road. So then we plan to go all over the UK. We've got 11 other cities, other places that we want to go, but potentially more. But we are in, and that's going to be May. That's going to be end of April, beginning of May.
But you know what, it is a massive gamble. It's a massive gamble.
We don't have a clue what we're doing.
Well, it's not even just that, but also the fact that a lot of our listeners are in Australia. So when we release the tour dates and you don't see your city or anything that close to you, which we'll try and avoid, obviously, don't take that as a knock. It's that we can't risk it because not enough people listen to us there. So we're going to, you know, we're trying to go to places with our most listeners and hopefully we sell some tickets and we can do it.
Like for us, we just want to get out there in the community and bring people together. And if we do this tour and break even, we will be delighted.
Yeah.
We don't care about coming home and filling our pockets with money. Like we just want to do it and not come back in debt. Like that is it. So if
are you
going to
have
that,
any guest speakers in each area?
If you know, people that might be known to our listeners.
That might have been on our podcast.
Why are you looking at me?
You know.
Not me. I was listening, I'm thinking, Clementine Ford, is that what you're talking about? You're going to get Clementine.
Not me. We wish. We're going to have some guests along the way.
Oh,
so.
Lovely. Oh, this is exciting. Yeah. I'm very excited about it. So you're going to announce this soon then, if it's in May. In terms of the ADHD, does it make this really, really hard to plan this sort of stuff? Because this is big stuff. Or are you getting people helping you? I don't know. Trained.
We're just trying to do this ourselves.
We're just flying by the seat of our pants, spinning too many plates, and often looking at exactly the same task in completely different angles.
Yeah.
So okay. Yeah,
that's probably good though, because you're going to see other things the other person didn't see. Yeah, no, I do.
Definitely.
But yeah, our main thing just now is getting venues confirmed, and once we get venues, then we can start selling tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, this is exciting. So, okay, and that'll all be on your socials, and obviously your socials and your website and your pod are going to be on the show notes. My last question really in terms of the pod is, because again, with your ADHD, now that you're so popular, you know, does it affect self-care? Because when you were talking about your stats, when you first, I was thinking, I can imagine myself getting really hyper-focused into a loophole of what are my stats and checking them all the time initially, because it's exciting and I want that dopamine. Have you ever had anything like that during this 9 months of the pod where you've had to sort of take a step back and be like, okay, we've got to chill now. I'm getting too focused on, I don't know, our statistics.
I'll be honest, for me, I have been absolutely terrified from start to finish that it's going to go tits up. And I think I'm just about out the other side of that now. But there was at one point when we had I had a meeting with Siobhan from the podcast. She's got a social media agency, Outsource Media, and she did me a session and she just basically said, like, you sort of don't really need to do quite this much. And it was the first time that I'd ever actually really let it out on Zoom, just bawled my eyes out. And I was just like, I'm so afraid. I'm so afraid that I'm going to mess this up. I'm so afraid that we're going to fail. And we care so much about this, and we are up against it. It is a hell of a lot to put yourself out there every day. Sometimes, you know, I think to myself, you could look at something like the last episode, and in a day, how many thousand people all over the world have just heard me tell like really personal things. You just think, fuck, you know, if this all ended tomorrow, I'd be devastated. Like, yeah. I don't, you know, and actually just going, well, it just isn't then, is it? We're just going to work through whatever we've got to work through. We know that we're helping people. We know that people are benefiting from it. We're benefiting from it massively, and we're just going to have to keep going. But now it is a case of just accepting that we're doing well and that that can stay that way. Yeah. I think, you know, like, so when you
feel a lot of pressure though for that, because you're doing really well, but now you're at a certain bar and you have to maintain that bar. And like, when I look at your socials all day, every day, you guys are putting socials up, you're putting reels up, interactive stuff. I know, like, yeah, Laura, you do all that, and then got this thing of at least once a week, at certain days, that you will always have your pod out. Is that a pressure, which for ADHD is, do you ever struggle with that and remembering it all and getting it done on time and deadlines? Yes. And all how do you manage all of that now you're so popular?
We've got an episode going out
in less than 2 hours, and it's not completely done yet.
Oh, really?
The recording's done. The recording's done.
Yeah, it's just the editing and
that's
finished.
Done. It's just like, you know, like the blurb and the final touches.
But yeah, it's always like that. There's always going to be things that we forget or that we get wrong, or there is a lot of pressure. But, you know, it's funny, when you introduced us, when we were really, really overwhelmed by that, it still feels like they're talking about somebody else. So like, we say the words 250,000 downloads or something, and someone else says it, it really is like they're talking about somebody else. And I think, you know, even like telling people, when you're telling friends I'm going on tour, you know, I piss myself laughing. I'm like, which is the most ridiculous thing ever. But I suppose the thing is, the thing to note as well is, apart from the community, Claire, nobody's backing us. I just wonder if we were talking about a different subject matter, or we were a little bit younger, or we fitted the mold of 40-year-old women with children, like, maybe somebody might have put their hand in their pocket and realized that actually they could make money out of us. I feel like we are dangerous people. We don't fit any kind of mold. We could say anything, you know, we're not it, you know, but there are people with less followers than us, doing less than us, that would be backed by some company, whoever it is, or whatever
management company.
We have had to do all of this on our own, so thank God for the community, because there is nobody helping us.
I think that'll change though. I do think that's changing. Like you said, I'm the same, because I lose out on opportunities because I talk about things real. I don't put grids as the parent blogger. I don't just make my life look amazing and happy on my grid, and I lose out a lot. So I get what you mean, but I do think things are shifting. When you look at Clementine Ford, she does these things and she's up there. And I think we're just a bit slower in this country, but we're going to get there. And I think you guys are paving that way. And I'm really grateful that you've come on. I'm very, very fangirly here, but I'm very grateful that you've come on to talk, and I hope you come back as well another time.
We're really grateful that you've asked us.
We're so grateful. Thank you.
We loved having you on our podcast. You're the best. And I think that you should come on the tour.
Yes.
I'd love to, if I have anything to bring from it, but
you do. Yeah, we'd love to have you.
Now it's recorded, I'm held accountable, aren't I?
we can't take it back now. You're coming.
I'll edit that out then. Thank you so much. And I really hope you do come back again. And I'm looking forward to the tour. And I'm hoping as soon as you get it up, I'll share it everywhere. I'm very, very grateful that you've come on to my little pod. So thank you so much. Okay.
If you've liked this episode, please help us out by liking, subscribing, or leaving us a review, as this helps us to reach more people. If you've got any ideas about topics to cover on future episodes, or questions about the pod, or you even want to be interviewed for it, please get in touch on our socials using @mindvoxpod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or email us on mindvoxpod@gmail.com.